Well, good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Janice P.M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Massachusetts. Today is Friday, May 19th, 2023. Today we're reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 82, paragraph 3. The alcoholic is like a tornado. And today our readers are for the 12 steps, Bonnie T, the 12 traditions, Joanne L. And our readers this morning are as follows, Julie E.B., Lorraine N., and Elaine B. And newcomer greeter is Jody E., and our announcements are Robin P. Now, this is the OA preamble. OA Alcoholic, Overeaters Anonymous is the fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. Now, OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Now, our sole purpose, OA states, the fifth tradition, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Now, at A Vision for You Big Book Study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. So here are the steps we took, and I will now ask Bonnie T. to please read the 12 steps of OA.
Good morning. This is Bonnie T. from Chicago, and here are the steps we take. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood for Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service, and have a blessed weekend, everyone.
And thank you so much, Bonnie T., for reading our 12 steps. Now I'll ask, please, Joanne L., to please read the 12 traditions of OA.
Hi, Jan. This is Joanne L. from Rhode Island. Can you hear me okay?
Something's going
on with my phone here.
Yes, no, I can hear you well.
Okay, all right. Thank you so much. The 12 traditions, Joanne L. from Rhode Island, recovered in Rhode Island. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. Common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority. a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement, The only requirement of OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, OA as such ought never be drawn, may never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Ten, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. In 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you very much, and I pass, and have a great weekend.
And thank you, Joanne L., for reading our OA 12 traditions. Now, this is how our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share in what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. And this is our abstinence requirement. For moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. Now, to share, you press star 1 to unmute. And once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. To have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speakers should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 82, paragraph 3. So now I will ask, take names of members that would like to share, but although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experiences too. Okay, I am ready to hear who would like to share on this paragraph. Would like to be up first.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., reader for the reading for today.
Okay, we'll take somebody else. Julie B., and next, somebody else.
Do you want me to read the paragraph first?
Well, wouldn't that be a good idea? Right. That
okay.
would be a good idea. I'm so sorry. No wonder nobody was speaking up. Yes, Julie, go ahead.
All right.
Please.
The alcoholic is like a tornado, roaring her way through the life of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a woman is unthinking when she says that sobriety is enough. She's like the farmer who came up out of her cyclone cellar to find her home ruined. To her husband, she remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't life grand? Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" Well, I'm Julie, gratefully recovered, and I'm hearing some background noise. I don't know if everyone's muted. I'm Julie, gratefully recovered in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And this paragraph was very pivotal to me in my amends process. I actually included this paragraph and read this paragraph to my husband during the amends that I wrote to him. And the reason is that I had always blamed him in all our disputes and all our different things, that he was the problem and acted like I was better then. But the truth was, I was a tornado. And just this week, I had a chance to work with one of my kiddos who's trying to be sober from his substance for the first time, who has kind of come out to people and started meetings. And we're talking about character defects, and I said about this raging, and he had actually been to a meeting where there was a bunch of there's someone doing crosstalk and someone that was interrupting, and he just left that meeting and he was sobbing for about half hour, 45 minutes, and the conflict just tore him up. Fortunately, he went back on another meeting. He got off that meeting, went on a different one in another hour, but it just shows me how hearts are broken and sweet relationships die, affections are uprooted. I thought my husband and I could never be close, but it turned out that once I worked these steps and kept making my living amends, kept living in these steps, as I've had more emotional sobriety, my goal, my ideal with my family and friends, once I had that ideal that God would be the one who is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and abounding steadfast love for me, then I began to try to live by the ideal of being emotionally sober and trustworthy. It's a lot of work. I guess I have about 6.5 years, and I still every day, you know, with this new circumstance coming up, every day I want to just say, hey, nothing the matter, isn't this grand? But the truth is, the anger that I expressed 6 years ago is still blowing through my life. And when he's on a meeting and hears that someone, you know, older with kids, that their substance is blowing through their life, and he's trying to take care of his, you know, younger in life, I just see the consequences. I have broken hearts by being unpredictable, like a landmine. They never knew who they were going to get. But today, I can take work through this, and it causes disturbance, but I don't have to roar through everyone's life. And it's not my life, it's theirs. So this is a beautiful paragraph and a way that I take responsibility. It may not be that I'm doing some things that the world might look at on the outside and see, but if I step back, I can tell that I have caused turmoil and uncertainty and insecurity as people braced for what would happen now. One more thing, my kids will still, one of them in particular, but they'll still, when we sit down at a restaurant, if I ask for something different on the menu, they'll still brace, even though, you know, for me to be centered all around the food and what I need. So just learning different ways. I'm a growing, unfolding child of the universe. Thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
And thank you so much, Julie B., for your kindness and stepping up as our first reader. Now I will open up the meeting for sharing. And do remember that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your sharing to every third day in order that others might share their experience. Now I'm ready to take some shares. The names, please.
Rita Q.
Rita, Rita? Rita,
yeah.
P as in Paul?
No, Q as in Quebec.
Rita Q, oh, Q. Okay, Rita, who's next? Who would like to be next?
Danielle.
After Rita.
Danielle W.
Danielle W. Danielle W. You can say where you're from when you share, And then I heard Roz W. Good morning, Roz.
Elaine B.
Elaine B. Okay, and one more. How about one more?
Dana B as in boy.
Oh, thank you. You're being kind. Dana B. Okay, Danielle W. I think that's no, Rita. Rita. Rita Q. Cheers.
Thank you. Can I be heard? Be heard?
You can be heard. Yes, you can.
Oh, thank you so much. My name is Rita Q, recovered compulsive overeater. Thanks to everybody giving service. I remember when I first saw it, totally different thing, the tornado, I remember just cringing and thinking, that's me. You know, as the recovery began to hit, I began to see it. And for me, I used to just hairdryer everybody out of the place to get my own way. And I was constantly manipulating people to do things that I wanted. And I didn't see the tornado. I really didn't. And I literally came up from the cellar thinking, there's nothing wrong here. What are you all talking about? And then I saw the disaster that I had left behind, the scorched earth, as I would say. And I love the part where it says that sobriety is enough. You know, putting down the food is only the beginning. It's what the person sharing has said. It's emotional sobriety for me. And I was reminded of it recently. I just got out of hospital. I'd had major surgery, and it was really, I was in a lot of pain. And I could feel that rage almost coming through the pain that I hadn't felt in years, you know. And it was really bizarre. And you know, the night I got out of hospital, it was really, really misbehaving, as I would call it. And I remember saying to my husband, I had to make it immediate amends. I was like, I'm really sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm in so much pain. I'm really struggling to, you know, to be a nice person, to remember the tools that I've been given not to do this. So it was just a stark reminder that, you know, it's a daily reprieve from all of it, as long as a contingent that I do the work, you know. And it, for me, that is the step 10s. That is, you know, making outreach calls. That is, you know, delving into the book, listening to podcasts, coming on the meetings, speaking to a sponsor, speaking to sponsees. It's all of it. You know, a kindly act once in a while isn't enough for me. I have to really work at this, because my disease really works at me when I am in a position of vulnerable, being vulnerable. So I just love this paragraph, and I really wanted to share because I'm not the tornado anymore. It's very peaceful in our home most of the time, except for the cat. And that's just a wonderful thing. So I'm just really glad to be here. And thank you. And I'm sorry, I'm in Manchester in the UK.
Thank you, Rita Q from the UK. Okay, now we have Danielle W. Please tell us where you're from, Danielle.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Danielle W. from Southern California. And, you know, I've been praying for you know, intuition or a decision, inspiration, because I have, you know, I have an amends to make. And this paragraph just laid it out so clearly for me. You know, after many, many, many years in sort of isolation, I entered into a relationship that, you know, I was really grateful for. And one of the greatest gifts was I could be completely myself. I felt like I didn't have to change. I could be who I was. But I didn't extend that same courtesy. And even though I've been in program a long time, I really thought that I had more emotional sobriety than I did. And I realized reading this paragraph and, you know, praying a lot about it over the last couple months or so, you know, I was a tornado. I, you know, if I didn't get my way, I would rage, I would control. You know, I kept thinking if he would just change this or just change that. And in fair, you know, eventually he ended the relationship. And I have amends to make. You know, I can see more and more clearly my behavior and how hurtful it was, and that, you know, I caused pain. You know, their sweet relationship died. And, you know, I'm a child of God, and I will continue to heal and grow. And I'm grateful that I can read this and I can see myself in it. And now I have, you know, some inspiration to go and make an amends that I need to make. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for your share, Danielle W., I believe from California. Okay, Roz W., you're up. Tell us where you're from, Roz.
Hello, Janice. Yes, I'm here. Hi. I just needed to unmute.
Hello, okay. Janice. This is Roz. Actually, G as in good. Roz
Okay,
from California, Los Angeles.
Thank you, Roz.
Thank you. I'm Roz, everybody, and I'd like to approach this share from my life, not just compulsive overeater, but from my life. And in my compulsive eating days, I was married to an alcoholic, and he was of, you know, the hopeless variety. He actually died of his kidney disease from all the drugs and alcohol. But he left, when I kicked him out of our house, his room, we weren't even in the same room. It was a complete mess and tornado. It was just an awful mess. And he never apologized. You know, we did have some peaceful words before he died. But he left, just as the big book says, a tornado, and never recognizing what he did. And for me, as a compulsive overeater, my tornado behavior was controlling my home. When I went on a diet, the whole family went on a diet. The kids, the kids. And we never had any sugar in the house because of me. And, you know, when we did, it didn't last very long. Or I would hide the Dove bars, or the Dove bars would be in the freezer, and they would have something else, and I would say something like, those are for me, or I'd leave a note on it. Those are for Mom. You get these. Do not touch. And I didn't allow my daughters to color their hair. I thought that was sinful for them to have hair color, like little purple streaks or stuff that kids like to do. I didn't let them dress up for Halloween. I was just controlling. And, you know, my daughters and my son have totally forgiven me. Oh, and my son and his buzz haircuts. They've forgiven me, and I tried to do the best I could as a mom. But, you know, I was just inconsiderate and controlling. And that was part of my personality and character defects as a compulsive overeater. And as a person who lives in recovery today, I try to practice being considerate and keeping others' happiness uppermost in mine. My kids are adults now. And, you know, I've asked their forgiveness for that. And we have a lot of fun together as with our relationships. And I try to remember what that tornado is like, because I get emotional tornadoes sometimes, and they do mess me up. So I'm just a work in progress every day. Prayer, meditation, sponsor, sponsees, 10 steps, and nightly reviews. Thank you, and I pass.
And thank you, Roz G. from California. And I want to thank everybody for keeping to the time. Otherwise, I will gently remind us that it is time. So now we have Elaine B.
Thank you so much for your beautiful service, faithful service, Janice M. This is Elaine B., and I am an extraordinarily grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Massachusetts, and I cannot even begin to tell you how powerful and how true this this can be. And so, self will run riot, caused so much destruction in my home that, and I've shared this before, that my husband wrote me a letter, and in it he said, Elaine, you've taken on a new lover, and it's food. We are still married, and we will always be married, but, you know, we'll have to live separately in this house because you have taken on a new lover. And I read the letter, and it was just completely, I couldn't absorb it at all. I just stuck it away somewhere, and then I found it again after I had gotten recovered, and I thought that, oh, it's enough that I just didn't need. I had made amends to him. I mean, things were doing as best as I could, but when I found that letter, I couldn't even deal with it. And then I hid it away again and found it 2 years after I had gotten my abstinence, after discovering a vision for you and finding a way to get through the steps that really worked for me and changed my life. Changed my life so much. Somebody is unmuted. I hear a little background noise. Changed my life so much that this time when I saw the letter, I understood it. My brain, it took that long to clear the fog. I brought it down to him and gave it to him. And I said, I am so sorry. I am so sorry for how I've been and how I've lived. And I'm very, very sorry. He could not even remember writing that letter because I had changed. Our marriage had changed so much. So as we do this work, and, you know, it's really hard making these amends, and we find we have to do it on a continuous basis with steps 10 and 11, but we get to show up in new ways. Today, I still need to make amends for my husband, but now it's more about being inconsiderate than being, you know, completely self-will run riot. And now I have more sensitivity and ability to express my discomfort when I feel it. You know, I used to think it meant that I needed to hang out with Ben and Jerry because they're always sweet and they never say no. But now it means that I get to work on our relationship and refine it and say, you know, when you do this, it makes me feel uncomfortable. I don't need to find relief. I can work with him on building a better relationship. And I don't need to ignore, deny, or push down those things that come up that are disturbances in our relationship, in any relationship, because I can go to God and say, what will you have me be? And those false evidence appearing real becomes true information and guidance from a power, a loving power, and fellows in this community to learn how to live and love better one day at a time. I'm so grateful to do it with all of you. With that, I pass.
And thank you so much, Elaine B. from Massachusetts. Now we have Dana B. Your turn, Dana.
Good morning. Dana B., recovered compulsive overeater from Texas. And thank you for all your shares. The previous one reminded just me of a funny or embarrassing, just quick quip, is that I was very heavy. I'm in my hometown. I have 2 half gallons of ice cream in my arms at the grocery checkout line when I see a girlfriend from high school. And I'm so humiliated that those ice cream cartons are in my hands. I had to kind of make a joke and say, meet my boyfriend. This is Mr. Bluebell. Anyway, it was so embarrassing. But for the paragraph, I'm going to speak from coming out from the cellar to the devastation. And luckily, I just blazed through the 12 steps with a wonderful sponsor so that I can face the devastation. If I had not done that groundwork of the step work, there's no way I could face it. I would make an excuse like the farmer did. Oh, isn't it just a lovely day out here among the wreckage? And I've begun making my amends, my face-to-face amends, and I also have been making my living amends, especially with my father and my sister. My father, we've done a face-to-face amends. My sister, not yet. She keeps rescheduling me. But those relationships are already transforming. I don't even recognize myself. I might have said this on my last share, but I'm holding my dad's hand. He's laying in this nursing home bed. And I'm not like, just, how soon can I let go of his hand? I'm just holding it as long as he wants to hold hands. My sister, I think she is just wondering, who is this? And what have you done with Dana? Because she just said, thank you for supporting me on something we were working on together. So anyway, just making that good and thorough start on the amends. God is really showing up for me. I have a funeral to go to out of state. And boy, was I a tornado there. So thank goodness I have the program. So if I am welcomed, great. If I am ignored, great. And then if I am confronted, okay, I'm going to be at peace because I'm going to carefully consider before going if I do need to make some face-to-face amends, but there's just going to be some. I just don't remember. It was so much scorched earth, as someone said before. So I'll just wrap up saying today God is guiding every step and decision I make. Otherwise, I'm completely undisciplined and becoming a mini twister in my current life. So that's me today. Thank you so much, Pat.
And thank you. That was Dana B. from Texas. Just a reminder for those that perhaps got on later, we're reading and discussing page 82, pardon me, paragraph 3. The alcoholic is like a tornado. So who would like to share next? Press 1 to unmute.
Oneis in.
Oneis. This is Chrissy. I can share.
Oneis in. Is that right, Oneis in?
Yes.
Okay. And I'm sorry. Chris, go ahead, Deb.
Chrissy M.
Christy M.
Linda
Next,
P.
Linda P. Who else?
Trisha D. from Georgia.
Trisha. Okay. Trisha D. And we can take another one, another person. Who else would like to step up?
Surrey C.
Surrey.
Chris
C.
from Washington.
Chris, and we'll do a Chris. All right, that's great. Oneis, N, please. Let's hear you share.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Oneis N, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Simi Valley, California. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful to be here today and hear all the, oh, man, all the wonderful shares. I've made so many notes and wrote down so much stuff this morning. And I just wanted to share about this from with my son. I have one son, and I had no idea the damage I had done until I had started studying this and going through the steps and stuff and seeing how the alcoholic is a tornado. And my tornado with him has always been yelling and threatening and disrupting his household and just trying to force my will and force everybody, him and my grandkids, to live the way I think they ought to be living, doing what I think they ought to be doing every moment of every day. And my mind would just tell me, you know, that, you know, I just want them to be happy. I want them to live better. And I was causing just the opposite, I like what I've heard about the emotional sobriety and how what I have with that is a daily reprieve, you know, because so of the selfish and inconsiderate habits, you know, all of that is just how I've always shown up, you know, and realizing that, you know, just the whole concept of emotional sobriety is a new one on me. And that this is the stuff that is the emotional drunkenness, the bullying and the forcing of my will and stuff is the emotional, you know, overeating, overindulging, because it really is, you know. But I looked up the word habits, because when I realized that this selfish and inconsiderate was how I showed up, I looked up the word habits, and the word habits is defined as practices, customs, patterns, routines, and it so describes my behavior that my routines with my son and his kids have been selfish and inconsiderate. My policy, my customs, you know, and I had no idea that this is how I was showing up, that I had no idea that this is where I was coming from, and then wondering why the affections have been uprooted. How he sees me differently now, how he relates to me differently. You know, he's guarded and he protects himself from me, his mother, you know. But this morning, I'm so grateful that I got to hear that it really can change and it really can happen as long as I keep on this road and keep on the 10 steps and keep on my prayer and meditation and keep putting God first in my life. That I can change. I'm certainly willing to change. I certainly see now that I need to change and that it actually can happen and that my relationship with him can get better. So grateful. Thank you for letting me share, and I'll pass.
And thank you, Juanice N. from California, for sharing. Now we have Christy M. And if you're not Christy, please dial 1 to mute your phone. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning. This is Christy M., grateful, recovering, bulimic, anorexic, and overeater from Oregon. And thank you. In thinking about the tornado, I guess, internalizing is that really the tornado started inside of me. Like, that was where the tornado was just, you know, the noise in my head of just constant, like we talk about, irritability, restlessness, fear. I would say, like, a lot of fear, a lot of criticalness. You know, nothing was ever good enough. I could walk into a room and I, like, could assess in a minute, you know, everything that, you know, this is messy or this is out of place or you didn't put this away. And that criticism, that tornado of negative thinking, you know, was also reflected on myself, which is where, like, the eating disorder came from. It's like my body was never good enough. Like, it was never, it was never enough. It was never what it needed to be. It could never get to that. And so I feel like the tornado started inside of me, and then that just reflected outside. You know, sometimes with, like, anorexia and bulimia, you don't always wear the tornado, but it's happening in there, and it's, like, eating you alive. And it's really taught me in this program that, like, recovery really starts inside. Like, it starts with my own serenity. It starts with my own peace. And when I'm at peace inside, you know, that impacts those around me. And when my inside is chaotic and my inside is negative or full of fear or resentment, that spreads around me as well. You know, my kids would say, you know, when I would get home from work, they would kind of dread it because I would walk in the door and the first thing I would do is start telling them everything they hadn't done and everything that they needed to do and start barking orders. And so it would, like, instead of being happy mom was home, you know, they would be anxious about, okay, well, what's mom going to be upset about or what's mom going to want me to do? And like that was hard to hear. And, you know, like, initially when I was in my disease, I thought, well, that's your fault because you didn't do all the things. And really it's like, no, it's inside of me, you know, and I could see the good or the bad. So I think for me today, it's giving my will over to my higher power, trusting my higher power, accepting life on life's terms, and making sure that my mind and my inner self is at peace and in serenity, so that is reflected to those that I love and around me. So with that, I'll pass.
And thank you so much, Christy M. from Oregon. Okay, Linda P., it is your turn.
Hi, this is Linda, Linda P. from Los Angeles, recovered compulsive overeater. I love this paragraph. When I first read the big book and didn't really understand a lot of the things that were in it many years ago, this paragraph really caught my attention because I knew that I had been that tornado. So it really spoke to me. And the shares today have been really wonderful, kind of outlining so many of the different things that are kind of behind all of this. And for myself, even from a really young age, I was like the tornado in my family. And there were a lot of pretty awful things going on at different points, but the way that I acted out affected everyone. I know when I made my amends with my dad, who was just a man of very few words, very kind, very gentle. And, you know, he said, you know, we always knew there was something wrong. We just didn't know what it was. And it was such a kind way of saying, you know, he got it. And that was just a beautiful experience with my father. something else I wanted to say. Oh, just the, you know, later this would come out. You know, it's always, you know, as other people have pointed out, it's self-will. You know, this is what it looks like when self-will, you know, when self-will is run riot, and I'm, you know, it's gone crazy, and this is what it looks like. And it affects people. There's an energy, you know, that one puts out. And the, one of the ways I've noticed that is being on the other end of it, you know, someone being around somebody who's really negative or acting out, and, you know, how does that make me feel? How does that affect me? I affect other people. It's like a ripple effect, you know. And the beauty of all of this is that, you know, through the steps, I get to get better, you know, and through daily, you know, reviews and doing my 10 steps, I get to interrupt this behavior, you know, hopefully before it happens, and sometimes have to repair it after, and just look at, you know, what is it that my self-will, you know, what effect am I having, you know, and sometimes it's really small. I don't even know that others can sense it, but I can, you know, and it's just so important, you know, to be spiritually fit. You know, it makes life so much easier, not just for myself, but for all of those around me. And yeah, with that, I'll pass. Thank you for letting me share.
And thank you, Linda P. from L.A. and everyone that's keeping the time. All right, Tricia D. from Georgia, I think. Tricia D.
Yes, hello, this is Tricia D. from Georgia. Can you hear me?
I can.
Oh, great. Good morning, and thank you so much for your service. I'm Tricia D. from Georgia, and this paragraph really speaks to me. I love when it says, you know, I am truly that compulsive eater who is like that tornado roaring her way through the lives of others. And I love that sentence where it says, selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel that a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. Wow, that sentence, that last sentence especially speaks to me, because I used to think that if I was abstinent and could put the sugar and flour down, I'd be fine. And you know, foam, you know, fine stands for. But you know, as the big book has taught me, and the 12 steps of the vision for you have taught me, that the allergy, you know, our disease is threefold. And we have the allergy of the body. Yes, we know, I could accept that. But the two parts that I really had to really work on my action was that mental obsession I had and that spiritual malady. And that's where he says that it's unthinkable that we think that we can just put down the food and our lives are going to be fine now. But no, that's just, we've used food all our life, our sugar. For me, I used it as a sedative. And when I put that sedative down, that sugar down, all those emotions and all those feelings and those character defects that I've been suppressing and being in denial, didn't even know I had them until I put that, my true self was coming out. And boy, did I have to do some house cleaning. So this mental obsession and that spiritual malady was something that I was like, had no idea about. And when I realized, as I did my fourth step and now living in steps 10, 11, and 12, you know, just that how much that I needed to change. I was in so much denial. Denial meaning didn't even know I was lying. You know, I remember I wanting to change my husband all the time. I wanted people to think like me. I'm not seeing other people's points of view. Your food was my master, and I was not present to anybody. I was too concerned, you know, about me. And also image management was another big one for me. I wonder how did I appear to others? And I mean, it was disgusting. It would just be like, oh, what a superior attitude I had. And because of working the steps of this program, and especially living in steps 10, 11, and 12, I am a new creation through the grace of God. I truly am. And, you know, on page 51 of the big book, one of my favorite lines, it says that the consciousness of the presence of God is today the most important fact of my life. When I'm in the present moment, I'm not thinking of the past and my past mistakes, and I'm not fearful of the future. But if I stay in the present moment, then that's where God is. And my ego doesn't have time to get in there and try to remind me that I should be worried about this or that. So I just can't thank God for this program of recovery. It's been the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. It's made me a new creation. Even my children and my husband have seen the biggest change in me because I work the program. And I thank you. I think I'm running out of time, but I just love this program. And thank you for letting me share. God bless.
And bye-bye. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Tricia D. from Georgia. Okay, we have about 2.5 minutes each. For Sherry and Chris, if Sherry, see, we take 2.5 minutes, we can get through with this. I hate to, but yeah, if you can. Sure, of course.
Lacey from Connecticut. I just wanted to thank everybody on the line. I'm struggling with the food. It's the first thing I did this morning. And then after that, I literally just did nothing but listen to the 8 to 9, a recording of the 7 to 8, and listening to this now while doing absolutely nothing but feeling like there's a tornado around me, except your voices have not been the tornado. Your voices have been the calm. The tornado is in my head, and there's just so much going on. So I just wanted to express my gratitude and just say that the food is just a cunning and baffling foe, and I am accepting and grateful to God for being exactly where I am today and having the freedom and, well, the freedom to be able to be as messed up with the food as I am right now, accepting as to where it is today and praying for the day that this can pass, because this too shall pass. And gratefully again, and with that I pass, and thank you so much.
And thank you, Siri C, yeah, for your share. Okay, 2.5 minutes for you, Chris. Star one to unmute, Chris. Are you there? Well, perhaps she has some difficulty.
Here we are.
Okay, good. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you.
About a minute, so a minute because
okay.
of time. Okay, Dan?
All right. So from what everyone shared, I know that you don't have to be alcoholic to cause havoc. And there was an alcoholic in my family, and my self-will, my controlling, just my behavior caused havoc in its own. I am so grateful today that I have a toolbox to go to. I have my sponsor to call. I have the God Squad to call. I have this, the big book, the instruction book. And the greatest thing I can always do for myself is go to my higher power, which is God, and pause when agitated. Pause. You know, keep my mouth shut. I don't have to say it. I don't have to say things meanly. You know, to use this program to its fullest. And I am so grateful for that. I wish everybody a happy, peaceful, serene day. With that, I pass.
And back to you. And thank you for being so kind. Well, we will now close with the reading from the big book on page 164. And that's going to be followed by the Serenity Prayer. So don't go away. Our book is meant to be suggestive only, keep you until then, and we have Lorraine N. to do that for us.
Good morning, and thank you, Janice. Good morning, everyone. Here is a reading from the chapter, A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.